Okay, so we'll talk about Sukkot, of course, continuing. So I just want to start with what I find to be a fascinating halakha. I did check my notes last year, so hopefully, you know, things will be a little bit different. And if they're the same, you probably don't remember anyway. So I don't. So okay, I shouldn't say that. I don't remember anyway. Okay. So let's take a look at. I find just really a powerful idea. I'm going to look in the Shulchan Aruch here. Where are we here? Okay. So this is a Shulchan Aruch. You know, the way the Shulchan Aruch works, or a Chaim, is he goes in order. The Shulchan Aruch is divided into four parts. The most common one, of course, is the Orach Chaim, which is the Orach Chaim, our ways of life, that he begins, you wake up in the morning, you wake up like a lion, whatever that means. You want to worship God. And he goes through, you put on the Hilchot Netilat Yadayim, how you wash your hands, and then the Hilchot Davening and Tzitzis and Tfillin, and then the Hilchot of eating, because after you daven, you have to eat. So Birchat HaMazon, and okay, and part of that, you know, turn. Then we get, those are the first two, the way they divide Orach Chaim, and now what they printed in the Mishnah Berurah, the six volumes. So the first two volumes are basically from waking up in the morning to going to bed at night, to Hilchot Mincha, Hilchot Marv. Then number threes and four are on Shabbat, the third and fourth parts, and Chelek 5 and 6 are the holidays, which we start on Pesach, because Pesach, you know, the year starts in Nisan, and it goes through, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch ends on Hilchot Purim. Hilchot Purim is the last thing. I've often pointed out this beautiful idea. The Rama, the first comment of the Rama is Shivite Hashem l'negdi tamid. You should always put God before us. That's how, you know, a Jew should always have God before us. Your whole mannerism, that's what he writes, will be very different. If you truly believe God is before us, which is we're supposed to believe, but it's not so simple, then you're going to act very differently. And he ends, Tov Lev Mishta Tamid. A person of good heart is always going to be happy. And I think these two, of course, go together. One who feels the presence of God, that's what Yom Kippur is all about. Lifnei Hashem Titaru, and Sukkot Usmachtem Lifnei Hashem. Be rejoiced before God. And as Rav Soloveitchik always pointed out, the highest level of joy is to feel the presence of God. So Shivite Hashem Lenegdi Tamid is how we begin the Shulchan Aruch, and then the first part ends, Tov Lev Mishta Tamid. A person will always be in joy and happy because the two go together. Anyways, that's just an aside. I think it's nice. Okay, so now we're in Orach Chaim. This is the last halacha of Yom Kippur. So you have to make Havdalah on Yom Kippur. Okay, we know that, and we do it with a light, unlike on Yontif. You don't make Bor Mirah Esh at the end of Yontif. We do at the end of Yom Kippur. Okay, very, very good. So a whole discussion here. And then he says like this, a famous halacha, Hamedaktikim, the ones who are very careful, the meticulous people, Matchili Miyad. I think today most people do it beforehand. We're so meticulous. But the idea was they Matchili Miyad, B'motzei Yom Kippurim. As soon as Yom Kippur, I assume they eat first. Because he does talk about eating. Immediately after the meal, you go and you start making your sukkah. Today, let's say, mi mitzvah el mitzvah. Because we said many times, what's more important than Yom Kippur is what happens the day after Yom Kippur. Vayihi macharat. Obviously, Yom Kippur, if it doesn't inspire us, it's not worth very much. So right away, we love mitzvot, even though it's night time. Remember, there's no electricity. It's dark. Right. Obviously, the Rama's talking, you know, he's in Poland here. So, but still, you go out after you've, even though it's dark, you go out and you build. You begin, you can finish it afterward. Matrilin, you begin to build your sukkah because we want to go from one mitzvah to another. Very nice. Okay, good. Now we just go to the next line in the Shulchan Aruch. That's the end of Hilchot Yom Kippurim. Now we come to Hilchot Sukkah. Hilchot Sukkah, Siman Tafresh, Cafe. B'sukkot Teishvu Shivat Yamim. Blah, blah, blah. Mitzvah L'Takein. Mitzvah L'Takein Asukkah Miyat Lachar Yom Kippurim, the mitzvah ba liyatcha atach mitzenu. So the Rama writes that there's a mitzvah to build the sukkah right after Yom Kippur, because new sukkahs is coming. Don't wait till the last minute to do sukkah. Mitzvah ba liyatcha atach mitzenu. Don't make it into chametz. It's a play on words, of course, because it says, etcha kamatzot tishmor. I forget what this lotoch chametz. They're doing a play on words. Mitzvah baliyatcha. When a mitzvah comes here, and don't let it turn into chametz. Don't let it rise. Don't delay. Do it right away. So sukkah is coming, Oh, I forgot. I was so busy doing tshuva, I forgot about Sukkot. So after Yom Kippur, Sukkot isn't 5 days built. So I don't understand. He just told us this. He just told us to build a Sukkot at the end of Hilchot Yom Kippurim. And now he tells us that's the first thing to build a Sukkot in Hilchot Sukkah. So, anybody have any idea? I know it's not the Chumash and it's not even the Rambam, so we don't go crazy in the Shulchan Aruch the way we do in the Rambam for every single word. Why does the Rambam add this word, that word? But still, it's very, very strange that the last halacha in Yom Kippur is right away, go build your sukkah, because we want to run from one mitzvah to another. And the first halacha in Hilchot Sukkah is build your sukkah, because you got to make sure not to delay in doing mitzvah. So anybody want to venture an explanation?
Well, what's so strange?
Why does this have to say twice?
Because if you're learning Hilchot Sukkot, you start at the beginning of Sukkot. You didn't see Yom Kippur ruling.
So you think that the people learning the Shulchan Aruch didn't learn Hilchot Yom Kippur?
Well,
I smile. I like that answer. I just don't think it's true in the Rama's mind. I mean, I think it's cute, and I think it could be true today, but I don't know. When they're writing the Shulchan Aruch, I don't think the Rama thought like you would Dafka learn Hilchot Sukkah, but not Hilchot Yom Kippurim. But it's an interesting answer. I find your approach interesting. I can't hear you. You muted yourself, Zev.
I say, isn't Sukkah a separate paragraph or a separate section?
Yeah, it is a separate section. So why? But still.
So if you open the book up and all learn the rules of Sukkah, you're not going to remember
where it's going to be. Okay. I'm a Kabel. I hear what you're saying. I'll say, I don't want to, God forbid. I mean, so that's what they say, like a Balabatish answer, you know, like a plain, simple answer. Now I'm going to give a Lamdish answer. Now I'm going to give a more, so the Lamdish answer is we build a Sukkah after Sukkahs for two reasons. Part of it is we build because it's the extension of Yom Kippur. And part of it we build because it's Sukkahs. And you can notice that in language. Yom Kippur is over. No, we have, what are we going to do? Yom Kippur's over. We need more mitzvahs. So we've got to look around. What's the first mitzvah I can do when Yom Kippur ends? Build a sukkah. So you want to go from mitzvah to mitzvah. The Shulchan Aruch says you're going from the mitzvah Yom Kippur. It didn't have to be building a sukkah. I could have built a fence on my house. But most people have their fence on their house already. In other words, it didn't matter what the mitzvah. It just so happened that convenience-wise, sukkah is the next mitzvah to do. So when Yom Kippur is over, I have to do a mitzvah. It didn't have to be sukkah, but that's the close by, so I'll do mitzvah. So that's the building of a sukkah is part of the halakhas of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, the extension of Yom Kippur. In Hilchot Sukkah, I'm not going to do with Yom Kippur. I have to build a sukkah because I have to build a sukkah because it's sukkahs. And that's what he said, mitzvah baliyatchal tach mitzena. I have to build it's not because it's after Yom Kippur. It's because sukkahs is soon. It happened to be Yom Kippur was before. But even if Yom Kippur wasn't before, I would still have to build a sukkah right away because I don't want to wait till the last minute. So I think the Rama is telling us we build a sukkah for two reasons. We build a sukkah as part of Yom Kippur, and we build a sukkah because it's sukkah. Now, of course, this is exactly the question, why sukkah is right after Yom Kippur, right? Sukkah is a dual holiday. It's the extension of Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. It's part of the Shalosh Regalim. Nothing to do with Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Totally independent holiday. It's a national holiday. We Aliyah LeRegel. It's very different than Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. That's one part. That's Hilchot Sukkot. But Sukkot is also part of the high holiday season. It's the conclusion, really, of the Yamim Norim. That's why I think I mentioned last week, maybe I didn't. The Rambam puts Hilchot Shofar and Lulav in the same grouping. Lulav is just an extension. Sukkot is extension. We move from the Yira, the Pachad, the Ema, all those sort of nervous feelings we have on Yom Kippur to Simcha of Sukkot, but it's a direct extension of Yom Kippur. So Sukkot is part of Yom Kippur, but it's also independent. And I think that this is what, you know, is philosophically the Rama is expressing halachically, and the Rama is expressing halachically when you build a sukkah. I don't know. You don't have to agree with me, but I think to me, it's so obvious and
Rabbi Kelman?
Yes.
I heard beautifully from Mori Rubel, who's a Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael.
I know who he is, yeah.
So he was using this idea to explain why we bring 14...
Yes, this is a Menachem Liebtag, I heard it. Correct. This is beautiful. So he was explaining why on all the holidays you bring either one or two, but the Purim will leave out. You bring one ayil, one ram and shiva kvasim and seven sheep. But on Sukkot, you bring two elim and 14 sheep. So this I heard from Rabbi Liebtag of many years ago. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. Because Sukkot is double holiday, so we double the sacrifices. So you bring two elim and 14 kvasim instead of one aisle and one and seven kvasim. So that's correct. That proves that Sukkot is this dual holiday. The other thing to note, the parim, the bulls, are very separate. We bring 70 bulls on Sukkot over 7 days, not 10 a day, 13 to 7. 13 the first day, 7 the last day, because the 70 nations. We go, if I finish my bar tour, I don't know if I will, I'm very, whatever, when I get to it. Well, so on Sukkot, on Yom Kippur, we're very internally focused. We're focused on our personal growth and our relationship to God. And as Rav Soloveitchik says, as the day comes to an end, we go to Matir Yonah. We start looking at the world at large. We can't just focus on ourselves, on our people. We have to have this universal outlook. And therefore, on Sukkot, that continues, that the idea of the 70 parim, we're praying for the nations of the world. But leaving out Sukkot, so on Rosh Chodesh, and Pesach and Shavuot, we bring Shnei Parim, 2, 1, and 7. Shnei Parim, 1 aisle and 7 kvasim. But on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shmini Atzeret, we bring only 1 par. If you look in the Chumash, it's 2, 1, and 7 or 1, 1, and 7. So it's so obvious that Shmini Atzeret is part of the Shalosh Regalim. It's the same as Rosh Yom Kippur. It's not a coincidence the Chassan puts on the Kittel on Shmini Atzeret. He doesn't wear the Kittel on Sukkot. And Shmini Atzeret has this Yisgadal. We're back in the Yom Kippur. It's slightly different. I know Chassan Malavani can talk the difference between, but we're back in the Yom Kippur mode on Shmini Atzeret, because the Torah is telling us it's 1, 1, and 7. It's Geshem. We're fearful. And it's the bracha, v'lo l'klala, l'chaim, v'lo l'mavet, right? So it's so beautiful. The rabbis don't make this up. The rabbis just know how to read Chumash really, really carefully. And they come up with these, beautiful ideas. Okay. Wow. Thank you. Yes. Maybe we won't get to Hoshanas today. That was the plan, but I went to a few minutes introduction. Okay, we'll get to Hoshanas. Yeah. Marty, you wanted to say something?
There were one question. The problem with that explanation is that you actually think behave more like Rosh Hashanah on Hoshana Rabbah.
Right, Hoshana Rabbah too. So that is correct, right. So Hoshana Rabbah is there's no hints to Hoshana Rabbah in the Torah. And that is why the Tzdukim didn't accept it. If you learn the Gemara, you'll say there were big fights. And that explains, right, that's exactly, you're in a sense, you're proving the point. In other words, Hoshana Rabbah, where in the world does that come from? So it's in the Mishnah, but where did the Mishnah get it from? It. There are no hints in the Torah that the seventh day, the Mishnah is Yom HaShvi Shel Arava, the seventh day of the Arava, the Hoshanas, there were special things they did in the Beit HaMikdash, but that's nowhere mentioned in the Torah. And therefore, not everybody accepted it. And that's why the rabbi set up the calendar that Hoshana Rabbah can never fall on Shabbos, right? That's the, I think we've explained before. Rosh Hashanah, I don't like it when Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot is on Shabbos. I miss taking the, first of all, we don't have a Torah mitzvah this year to take the lulav. It's only a rabbinic mitzvah. It's easier to buy the etrog. You don't have to worry about all these things that make it puzzle. But we allow us to miss the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah. The rabbis could have set up the calendar that Rosh Hashanah never falls on Shabbos. They set it up that it never falls on Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. They could have put in Shabbat. Maybe they would have had to take off Friday. They could have done something else, or they would have taken out the Sunday. The reason it can't fall on Sunday, so Hoshana Rabbah won't fall on Shabbos. Because if Hoshana Rabbah falls, you can't do all, you can't bang the Hoshanas. Who cares? That's like a minhag. It's a low minhag. That's very unimportant in the scheme of things. But it's because everybody knows how important the shofar is. Nobody's going to say, oh, we didn't blow shofar this year, or at least you blow it on, either they'll blow it next year or on the second day, whatever. No one's going to disparage the mitzvah of shofar because we missed it 1 year. even if we missed the whole thing and didn't do it on the second day. But Hoshanas, yeah, they're not really so important. If it was really important, we would have done it. People don't know Shabbos. People don't know these things. So therefore, the rabbis were very insistent. Sometimes the rabbis have to be stronger on rabbinic law because people don't take it seriously than on biblical law. So you're right. Hoshana Rabbah today has taken on that aura with the kittel and with Shir HaMalas and all the things we do. It's more Kabbalistic. I don't know, but I'm talking on the Torah. You see that Shemini Atzeret. Want to say Hoshana Rabbah is part of Shemini Atzeret? I don't know, but yeah, it's an interesting point. Okay. All right. Let me just say something else. We'll get as far as we can. Okay. So I assume I've mentioned this at some point in the past. You know, I often mention that the Talmud was edited with great precision. That's not the way people think when they, especially teenagers, when they first learn Gemara, and they're not basically what they do today in yeshivas, they throw you into the Gemara. They don't really give you background. You know, if you wanted to teach Gemara really properly, you'd have a year of Aramaic. Like you'd learn Aramaic before you opened up the Gemara, Aramaic grammar, Aramaic syntax, and you'd learn about who are all the Tanaim were, who lived when. So when Rav and Rav Ashi are talking, are they talking to each other, or is it 200 years in the Gemara has them talking to each other? You know, is this one living in Israel? This is from Surah and Pumbedita, which Beit Midrash. That's what the scholars do, you know. Well, this in the Surah, they learned like this, and Pumbedita, they learned like this, and then in Tveria, it was all different. So you would spend the year teaching kids, and then when they open up the Gemara, bango, wow, it'd be a breeze. You'd spend 5 years learning Mishnayos, as the Mishnah says, Mishnah from 10 to 15, and Gemara only at 15. So, you know, you wouldn't teach your kids Gemara in grade 4, 5, 6, or 7, or 8. But we're more advanced than previous generations. Adora, we're greater than the generation of the Maral of Prague, so we teach our kids Gemara at the Elim Etzias, the hardest Gemara, when they're 11 years old, and they don't understand one thing. Yehu Shalom Idat. Okay, what can we do? Beautiful. So people think the Gemara goes off on stories, they don't get it, because you're right. If you just read the Gemara without in-depth understanding, the Gemara looks like it's all over the place. It's disorganized. There's no sentences. It's a whole thing. But if you read the Gemara properly, it's so beautifully constructed. Really, every word, just the one little thing. One word, you know, how can you tell if two rabbis are talking to each other, or the editors of the Gemara put them they just quote opinions. This one comes from Bava Larcha. How do you know if the two rabbis are talking to each other, or the Gemara is just quoting two rabbis who have an opinion on something? Anybody know? It's very simple. But I don't know if people were ever taught this. I guess not. Okay. All you have to do is say, does it say Gemara Amar, or does it say Amar Le? That's all. When it says Amar Le, it means he said to him. There's no Amar Las in the Gemara. That's not 100% true. But Amar Le, he said to him. If it's Amar, he said. So in the third century, yeah, that very often in the Gemara. A debate continues for hundreds of years. So they'll quote a rabbi of the third century, and then they'll quote a rabbi of the fourth century, and this rabbi's in Israel, and this rabbi's in Babel. You don't know that unless you know that. In other words, and the way to know, I mean, you have to know that Abai and Rav are the fourth generation, and Rav and Shmuel are the first generation, and Hillel and Shammai are Tanaim, and Rav Zeira lived after Rabbah. You know, you have to know these things, but many people don't. It's just sort of one mishmash. So the Gemara is, so Amar Le means they're talking to each other. They're debating. They're in the same room, in the same base medrash. And Amar, they could have lived 100 years apart, 200 years apart. Anyway, so the Gemara is edited with great precision. I've mentioned that. And now what they do is the Agadot, the non-legal portions were put in, and at appropriate places. I've said many, many times that the stories of the destruction of the temple are in Masechet Gittin, because that's the divorce between God and the Jewish people was exiled. The Gemara is about Eretz Yisrael and how important and how beautiful the land of Israel is, are in Ketuvot, but it talks about the relationship between them. So, I mean, it's beautiful. So what's the Agadot of Sukkot? Or, I mean, there are more. So what Agadot go in Masechet Sukkah that tell us what the theme of Sukkot is? Anybody? Chinuch. Education. That's sukkah. Now, why? So first of all, where do they get it from? So let's just share our screen a little bit here. So like I just told you before, the rabbis don't make up this stuff. They're hints in the Torah. The korban, there's one, it's better two, they're double. The rabbis read the Torah very carefully, and the rabbis see what it says in the Torah. So the rabbis saw, why can't I? Why is it being blocked? Hold on. So the rabbis read a verse we all know. You should take the lulav and etrog, okay? Basukot teshvu. This is the only time, right? Sukkot is mentioned seven times in the Torah, many verses, but only once that the Torah tells we actually have to sit in a sukkah. Everything else, nothing about sitting in the sukkah, either about agriculture, the Armenian, nothing about one verse. Okay, we follow one verse, but there's only one verse in the Torah that you have to sit in a sukkah. The other time, sukkah is the end of the year. You bring this korban, you do this, you do that, but not sit in a sukkah. Why do we sit in a sukkah? Leman yedu Torah tekem, that you have to know. Your future generation shall know. That's probably why the rabbis got Torah Teichem. You have to teach your children. Leman yedu Torah Teichem. Ki besukot hoshavti. You have to teach your children that God redeemed us through Sukkot. So Sukkah becomes the, Sukkot becomes the Masechet or the holiday of Chinuch. We normally associate it with Pesach, but it's really
Pesach. There are more Sukkim with Pesach.
Correct.
You know, you have all the Arba Banim.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. That's exactly is my point, that it isn't just Pesach. But so part of the answer is that Sukkot is the culminating holiday. The reason Sukkot is a double holiday, two Korbanot, because Sukkot is the culminating holiday, which means it's the most important holiday. That's why in rabbinic literature, Sukkot is known as Chag, Bechag. The holiday is not Pesach. The holiday, so I know Sukkot is much more popular, especially among non-observant Jews. But nonetheless, Pesach, the goal of Pesach is Sukkot. Everybody tells you the goal of Pesach is Shavuot, right? We got out of Egypt to get the Torah. That's true, but it's not. That's not what the Torah emphasizes. I'll look later. If you look carefully in Shmot, when God appears to Moshe, he doesn't say, come to Mount Sinai. That comes later. He says, come, I'm going to take you out of Egypt to the land of Israel. It's not about going to Sinai. It's about going to Israel. We read on Yom Kippur. What do we read? Mincha kimasei eretz Mitzrayim asher gartem ba'lotasu. Do not do the action of the Egyptians. Or like the people in Canaan. That's toeva. Don't be like them. You're a different. We were taken out of Egypt to go to Israel. Okay, now we're going to Israel. How are we going to live? Oh, you know what? Here, make a pit stop on the way, and here's your guidebook, your instruction book, how to live. But the Torah is a means to an end. The Torah is a guidebook, how we're going to live in Israel. So the purpose of Pesach is to get to Israel. Sukkot is a holiday of Israel. I mean, are they Arba-Minim? It's the whole agricultural thing. That's why I mentioned only once in the Sukkah is Sukkot is a holiday of Israel. It's a holiday of the journey to Israel, right? Pesach is Exodus. Very nice. Freedom is very important. But freedom on his own, I don't say it's meaningless. That's not true. It's not as me. It doesn't serve a higher purpose. It just, so you're not a slave. That's nice. But it doesn't contribute to the world in any positive sense. So Pesach is really just ground zero. And then, but the goal is the journey to Israel, the 40-year journey to Israel. So Sukkot is the culminating holiday. So I would say, therefore, the Chinuch, it starts on Pesach, but it continues on Sukkot. That's what Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot means. It's the journey from Egypt to the land of Israel, 40 years. And that's why I think, that's why I think that Chinuch is in Sukkot. In other words, what do you want to teach your kids? And let's say, so you can teach your kids that God does everything. And that's not such, or you can teach your kids that there are lots of challenges in life. And sometimes a goal takes 40 years to reach. What's a much more important lesson? Well, one lesson is I can rely on God. We do nothing. We sit in Egypt, nothing. God will do everything for us. He'll bring the plagues. He'll smite the, all we have to do is jump into the sea. You won't do anything. That's a very bad lesson. And it didn't work. The slaves weren't capable. of learning. You want to teach your kids that life is tough. I mean, and Sukkot is the journey for 40 years. What's the Sukkot? Because in the desert for either it's the Ananei HaKavod, the clouds of glory, or we sat in the Sukkot. They're different ideas, but they both are the same thing. Both were for 40 years. We were stuck in the desert till we reached our goal. So that's what Chinuch is all about. Chinuch is all about you don't give up on the challenges of life. Just it can take 40 years. Sometimes it takes more than 40 years. Sometimes you never reach your goal. So that's why I think Lemanye, but it's clear in the Torah, Lemanye du Dor Techem. Right. We think it's Pesach. Pesach is the beginning. Pesach is you have to let the kids ask questions, because if they don't ask questions, you're going to lose them right off the bat. You know, if kids, you know, the Rebbe who says here, I don't know how to say it in Yiddish, but you do. We don't ask any questions. I don't know why I'm thinking of that, but a friend of mine, his kid, I basically got kicked out of a yeshiva, you know, school. I know, because his kid was like 10 years old. And, he asked his Rebbe, he said, it was a very innocent question. He said, the Torah is salt. You have to pour salt so much on the Torah. So he said, you know, salt isn't healthy to drink so much salt. The doctors say not so much, you know, you have to avoid so much salt. So why does the Torah say you have to have so much salt? So the school called the parents. Well, what kind of apikoros did you raise as a child? They pulled they told him he had to leave the kid. They pulled the kid out of the school. You can't ask it. It's a very beautiful question. Okay, well, whatever the answer is. But you got to allow people to ask questions. So that's Pesach. But Chinuch is really on Sukkot. That's what that's there for the Agadot. All I mentioned this recently, right? That the Agadot. In Sukkah, Bilga, I mean, I'm not going to go through all the stories, but a lot of the stories about the importance of education are in the Masechet Sukkah. I'll just show you one source, sort of the main halachic source of Chinuch, which of course is in Masechet Sukkah, because that's what, you know, I'm telling you. So the Gemara basically says, at what age should you buy your kid a lulav? So yesterday I got my our lulavim, so I don't want to get the whole process of buying lulavim is not one of my favorite things. Let's just put it that way. I think people, whatever, the prices are outrageous and whatever. Okay, some people have to make a living, but okay, we'll leave that for another time. Katan hayodea lilaneya. So the Mishnah says if a child knows how to shake the lulav, then he's obligated in Sukkah. So the Gemara then says, so this is the base, this is the most important halachic source. Why did I just lose it? Of Chinuch. It's, I think a lot of people know this Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, our rabbis talk, Katana Yodei Linanea, Chayav Lulav. If the Katan knows how to shake the lulav, he knows how to dress himself. That's what it means. He doesn't need his mother to take out the clothes in the morning. He can get dressed by himself. Lishmor tefillin, if he knows how to guard the tefillin need to be careful. Tzitzis, you can play football in the making a rib, who cares? Tefillin, you got to guard. Aviv lo keichlo tefillin, yodei ledaber. It's interesting. The order is a little bit weird. I would think he knows how to speak before he knows how to get dressed and watch his tefillin. But if he knows how to speak, aviv melamdo Torah, Ukriyat Shema. Very interesting that they distinguish between Torah and Kriyat Shema. And as we have other stories, basically, even though you don't have to shake the lulav to fulfill the mitzvah, you don't. You just have to lift it up. That's what we all know. We lift it up with the pitum backwards, because if we have it forward, we fulfill the mitzvah, and then you can't make a bracha anymore. Nonetheless, then this is a very important idea. All the Rishonim point this out. The mitzvah of Chinuch only applies if the kid knows. And it's a little complicated. Hodu, you do it at the first two, and Anashem, but Hoshiana, but not Anashem Hatzlich. And he's got to know where to shake the lulav. If he doesn't know all the intricacies, and many adults don't know this, you know, people who are some, you know, they don't remember from year to year. They haven't learned. They'll watch what they do in shul. If he doesn't know the ins and outs, there's no mitzvah to take the lulav for the kid. Why not? Because as we know, practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes habit. Perfect practice makes perfect. If you practice the wrong thing, if you learn it wrong, and that's the problem. The problem with so much of our education, kids learn things in grade two wrong. And their whole life, they just, you know, there are, we teach like story, we teach me, we, you know, they teach me drushim are literal. So the people grow up their whole life thinking Midrash, even though they know they've heard rabbis say, the Rambam says, you're a fool if you believe Midrash Malirul, but that early teaching from kindergarten and nursery and the plays they all did, and that Esther had a tail, not Esther, Vashti had a tail, and all these other wonderful, and the Rivka was 3 years old when she got married, and all these other things they teach, which I don't want to say it's Narishkeit, but it's Narishkeit. It's, you have to understand, God forbid. It's Narishkeit if you take it in a literal sense. The Midrashim have meaning. And that's the other thing the Rambam says. People often quote, the Rambam says, you're a fool, take Midrashim literally, but you're a heretic if you, think the Midrashim have no meaning. I don't know if he uses the word heretic, but that he gets even madder at them. Of course, the Midrashim have meaning, but like any good poetry, anything, literal meaning can destroy something. We know that. You read a poem, you interpret it literally, you've destroyed the whole meaning. So that's, it's sophistication. Torah is sophisticated. So the rabbis don't want you training your kid. You don't teach the Torah kid to the Torah before he's ready. Katana, only when he knows how to speak, you can begin to teach. I don't know when I should teach earlier, but you don't want to do things too early, because then kids learn bad habits. But my point is, this is all in Masechet Sukkah, because Sukkah is the mitzvah of chinuch. It's we have to teach our kids. Goals are very long, and it's the ultimate goal. Pesach was not so much on Shavuot, but the goal of Pesach is on Sukkot, which is why, of course, they're exactly 6 months apart, and they're both on the 15th day of the month, and they're both 7 days, and like, you know, there are a lot of parallels between Pesach and Sukkot. For that reason, they're the twin pillars of our Jewish calendar. Shavuot is like an add-on, as is Shemini Atzeret, right? I mean, Shemini Atzeret, and that's Shavuos. Okay, enough introduction. Let's talk about Hoshana. Any questions, comments? Anybody want to throw some stones at me? That's an advantage on Zoom. Nobody can. I don't know. But okay. No, but really, I think it's so beautiful. And the rabbis picked this up on Chinuch. They read the Torah so carefully. I'll say one more thing very briefly, although usually I don't say as brief as I think I will. Sukkot is a holiday of unity, right? Everybody knows that, the holiday of unity. So you can argue right after Yom Kippur if Jews don't come together. All true. It's 100% true. But I just want to point out, you know where else the rabbis, they picked it up from? They picked it up from what it says in the Chumash. Where's the first time that Sukkot is mentioned in the Chumash?
Isn't that Yaakov?
Yaakov and Esav. Excellent. He goes to Sukkot. So right away, Sukkot tells us it's the relationship between the Jew and the non-Jew. That's the first thing you know about Sukkot. Torah puts it in. So that's, it's something we're concerned for the world at large. We're concerned the meeting with Esav went better than could have been hoped for. We're concerned about that. What about, what's the last time that Sukkot is mentioned in the Torah? I mentioned this recently. I don't remember where, but if I repeated it, I apologize, but it seems like it's good. The last time Sukkot is mentioned in the Torah, Hakel. Hakel and Nashim, Nashim v'taf. Every Jew has to come together. So obviously the rabbis are picking up on this. And they understand that Sukkot is the holiday of Jewish unity. And then they can develop all the themes, because it says so in the Chumash. And in the Chumash, Sukkot is about unity with non-Jews, Yaakov and Esav. So we go our separate ways, but we're part of the same, you know, we have to come together at many times. We have to get along. We have to learn. We can kiss each other. More important, it's the 612 mitzvah to come together. So that's how the rabbis, it's not that the rabbis made up that. So all the midrashim that the arba meaning represent four types of Jews. Well, why does it represent four types of Jews? It represents four plants. I can say anything represents anything, but no, so it has a nice smell. So smell is your actions. Okay. It's very nice, but the rabbis are picking it up from what it says in the Chumash. That's what, and I think that's true with every medrash, with everything. That's one thing. And the Chamali was drilled into us. All, you know, Rashi, you know, only Talmidei Chachamim can understand Rashi. Everybody thinks, because yeah, Makashel, the Rashi, which Rashi, you know, and if you study Rashi properly, which is very hard to do, and you need an amazing teacher like the Chamali was, read her article on Rashi. Rashi will sometimes quote a Medrash the half the Medrash on a different verse than the Medrash quotes it on. Because the Medrash is one goal and Rashi has a different goal. The Medrash is not interested in Parshanut HaMikra. Rashi's interested in Parshanut HaMikra. So it's little things like that. They're hints. They're hints in the verses. Anyways, okay. Let's talk about for the few minutes we have left. Let's talk about, I said we'll talk about Hoshanas a little bit. So I figured, I talked a little bit last year about the beginning of Hoshanas, but this year, since the first day is on Shabbos, we figured we'd talk about the Hoshanas of Shabbos. Now Hoshanas is a later minhag. They, in the Beit HaMikdash, they used to walk around every day. That's where Hoshana Rabbah comes from. Mizbeach, there is a debate. Did they walk around with their lulav and etrog, or did they walk around with aravot? Like, Aravot of Hoshana Rabbah. So we, our practice today is we walk around with the lulav and etrog, but my understanding is that practice only developed in the Gaonic period to do hakavas, and then Nusach Hashinas and Nusach Sfar do it at different places. Is it part of Halal? Is it part of Musaf? Is it part of the mitzvah of lulav that we do right after Halal? That's what the Sfardim do. The Ashkenazim take it after Musaf. Because it's part of our tefillot, Hoshana, we're crying out to God. So it's very interesting. In other words, that's Rav Soloveitchik was in. Every minhag has a reason. I have a joke. The person who runs the minion at chat knows I get mad at him every year. We joke about it because for convenience, we're in a rush. And I know other shuls have done this, even though they daven Nusach Ashkenaz. So you're supposed to Hoshanas after Musaf. They do it after Halloah because it's inconvenient. You got to put the lulav down away and then take it up later. So once it's up, they would like to do it. A lot of shuls do that. So it bothers me. What can I say? I'm a stickler. So I joke with him. I get it. I understand. I said, no, we mix up the minhagim. But then Rav Soloveitchik says, no, it's a real, what do you mean? Well, why do they take it after Musaf and why do they do it after their Hallel? Because it's different understandings of what they represent. The same way we blow shofar in davening because it's a form of tefillah, and we take the lulav and Hallel because it's a form of praise to God. So what's the Hoshanas is a little, it's sort of in the middle. Because it's not exactly like Luvinesh, and we're crying out to God. We're not singing to God. We're crying out, Hoshana, and even the tune, Hoshana, Lamantra Eloheinu, Hoshana. It's sort of nice, but it also has this, also, no, that was wrong. But, Hoshana, it has this crying out to God. Anyways, so we, that's our minhag. We take the lulav and etrog and we go around the bima, but, we do this even on Shabbos when we don't take the lulav and etrog, which of course that's a rabbinic decree, not for now. Same way we don't take it on Rosh Hashanah, but we say the Hoshana. So I just figured I'll go through some of them. We'll quickly go through. I don't know how many people pay attention. I know I obviously haven't paid so much attention over years because I was learning a lot of stuff as I was preparing this. So that's good. So I'll share the Hoshanas with you so you can see it. Where are we going here? Okay. Seder Ashkenaz. Okay. So you say the first opening thing. Okay. Am Nitzora, Om Nitzora Kivavat. So we're basically the Hoshanas are all alphabetical across this. One of the lost fields of Judaism is the study of Jewish poetry. I think there are people in Israel. In Chutz Laaretz, nobody does this stuff. But in Israel, there are people who write piyut and analyze piyut. And, you know, you can spend 10 years on Rabbi Elazar HaKalir's piyutim. It's, you know, it's unbelievable. So they're alphabetical. I think everybody was taught alphabetical A was easy to memorize. That's probably the practical reason. And B, the broader, the Lamdisher reason, I said, that's the Balabatish reason, as I said before. You have to know to memorize it. The other reason is we can't really praise God or we can't pray to God. We do A to Z and we hope God fills in all the letters. So just let's quickly go through it, read it together. Omnit Sorak Kivavat. Here you have the translation, I guess. The nation that is watched like an eye. So we say that God's eyes watch the land of Israel. But it's the nation that is watched by God. Presumably the importance of one's eye that, you know, and looking at him and always concerned for the people. Bonenet badat nefesh mishivat. Bonenet here doesn't mean to build, although maybe it's a play on word to build, but you build up our religion. But it's from the word bina, from understanding, from bonenet bedat. That's all the commentaries and the Sinai looked at, all explain it. Here they say contemplates. I don't know that contemplates is really the right word, but okay. Bonenet bedat nefesh mishivat. They understand that a religious person has a his soul is at peace. Torah Hashem Tamima. I see, like in the Otzar Tefillah, they quote Kabbalah Farshim quote the parts Torah Hashem Tamima Meshivat Nafesh. The Torah is wholesome and beautiful. It restores our soul, right? Shabbat restores our soul. That's what the Shabbat is all about, the hecticness of the week. So this beautiful nation that is watched over like a hawk, you know, the eyes of the hawk are understand the beauty, how Shabbat is the greatest gift. The Gemara says that what's one of the three gifts God gave. It's always a challenge, you know, when you teach non-observing kids and you want to show them how beautiful the Shabbat is. Forget Hilchot Shabbos. Just the, you got to be, we all know, like people who keep Shabbos. No, you got to, in today's world, you got to be insane not to keep Shabbos. It's such a, okay, you have to check your, whatever it is. But we all understand that. Gomerit Hilchot Shabbat. They learn the laws of Shabbat. So you see it all rhymes. It goes alphabetically. Doreshet Masat Shabbat. They seek out the drosh masat Shabbat, the carrying of Shabbat. So what does that mean? So, okay. So it means two things. And one is to, we know we have three types of Erevin, right? We have an Erev, we have Erev Tavshilin, which we don't have to do this year. We'll have to do on, I don't know when we'll have to do it. What Yontif is coming up? That's going to be next to Shabbos on Friday. I don't know. Next year, Rosh Hashanah. Next year, Rosh Hashanah, I think, is a 3-day Yontif. That's Erev Tavsh. Erev means to mix together, to Arvev, Arov, and the Aser Makod, all these animals, right? Eruv, to join together. So that's Erev Tavshilin. We join together Yontif and Shabbos. We begin the cooking of Shabbos on Yontif. But of course, the ones here we're talking about are Erevei Tchumim and Erevei Chatzerot. What we call an Erev is Erev Chatzerot. A Chatzer is a courtyard. We make all our courtyards into one private property so we can carry. We symbolically join them together. Everybody gives a little bit of food in theory. We build a little wall or wires, whatever we build around it, so we can care. We learn, and these are complicated laws. The Reshet Masach, we have to seek out. We have to learn. That's the Erevei Chatzerot. Takovat Alpaim Tchum for on Shabbat. We established that we can only watch Alpaim. Alpaim is 2,000 Amot. We don't know exact L's. Okay, fine. Well, that's approximately a kilometer, probably a little less than a kilometer. People, you live in a big city, you don't have to worry about Tchum Shabbat. But when you go to the bungalow colony, if they have or whatever, they go to their cottages here, sometimes you really have to worry about it. People don't know this. It's again, there's no one's ever built it. I don't know how many people have ever done an Erev Tchum. Every people say, I want to walk more than 2,000 amot, so I'm going to put my, can make an Erev Tchum so you can walk 4,000 amot. You can do that. So these are the two forms of carrying, in a sense, carrying and walking. So that's what the Jew does. It's interesting. We start with carrying. Because we know here, just for a second, just to get back, you know, half of a Masechet Shabbat talks about caring, and all a Masechet, I mean, not all, but, you know, Masechet Erevin. We have Masechet on Shabbat, the Lord's Word. Then we have a separate one, Erevin. And yet half of Erevin is in Shabbos, or half of Shabbos is about Erevin. Caring. Yitzir HaShabbos, Shtayim Seim Arba. We begin Masechet Shabbat with caring. Why is caring so important? And here we begin those Shanas. Well, why so much emphasis on caring?
Symbol of ownership.
Okay, very good. So symbol of ownership. Yeah. Okay. Good. Is it more so than other things? Yeah. I always like to say similar to what you're saying. It's the idea of transportation. It's the idea that the other 38 malachot have no meaning if you have no way to get it to market. We today all know post-COVID, our supply chains are still messed up. And that's why inflation and all the things going on in the economy. And I said it a while ago, right? The border between, you could not cross that border and on the land borders in Canada, United States. Boy, was it shut. We couldn't get into the United States from March of 2020 till November 2021. 18 months, the border was shut like anything. And except if you were a truck driver and you were transporting food, transporting, because the you can't survive without transport. So carrying becomes the the sort of the other 38 melachot take on meaning. If you can't care, it's very nice. So you're a farmer, so you cut down, you plant, you do all those 11 things, you know, to make food. That's very nice. What are you going to do with your food? Can't carry it. It's all worthless. So the era, I think caring is like the malacha kolel. It's also molecular. People are very not so careful about caring. We know that people, for all kinds of reasons, and everybody knows there were people who kept Shabbos. Today, pretty much every big city, religious Jews won't move to a place without an Arab. But it didn't used to be that way. I mean, Toronto is the third Arab in North America. And the Arab was built here in 1920s, I believe. Rabbi Grobart built the first Arab here. You know, 100 years ago, nobody had Arab in then whatever, and people carried it. So that's, it's interesting. They start, okay, we have a little time to do a few more. Like for those who came, I do apologize. I have to leave a few minutes early today. I have to teach actually, a chat. Zachor v'sham orko u'mishivat ragel. Shabbat, and therefore they can't go so far on Shabbat, right? So these are the three things: the resh and masat, carrying, how far you can walk, and your foot has to stop. Zachor v'shamor mekayemet b'Shabbat. They keep zachor v'shamor. So what does zachor here mean? How do you keep zachor on Shabbat? The shamor is easy. You don't do the 39 melachot. How do you fulfill the mitzvah of zachor? Zachor v'shamor mekayemet. In Lechad Dodi, we say they were said b'dibur achad. But here we say we observe these mitzvot. How do you observe the mitzvah of Zachor?
Kiddush.
So that's the standard thing. But I pointed out because I want to say part two. And of course, the Ramban's, you know, beautiful comment, which makes, you know, so much sense. You have to remember something when you don't have it. You don't have to see when we say Kiddush, we're interpreting Zachor, a drasha, to mean laskir, to mention. Zachor Yamashbat doesn't mean to remember. It doesn't only mean to remember. It means to mention laskir. When we say Zachor, but we all know, everybody translated to remember, right? Everybody knows Zachor is to remember. So you don't have to remember something when you have it. You don't have to remember it when you don't have it. So the Ramban says, that's why you fulfill the mitzvah of Zachor Yamashbat like a show on Monday. Hayom yom sheni b'Shabbat, hayom yom shlishi b'Shabbat. Every day, our week revolves around Shabbos. We remember the, so it's so beautiful. Remember the importance of Shabbat all week, right? That's Beit Shammai took that to an extreme. That when he would find something nice, he would keep it. I'm not going to enjoy it during the week. I only enjoy it on Shabbat. Hillel said, no, Baruch Hashem yom yom. We enjoy what we have now, but still we do everything. We remember the Shabbat all 7 days of the week. And that's why there are no names. We don't have Monday, Tuesday. We have Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi. Okay. Chasha lemaher biyat Shabbat. They yearn to bring the Shabbat closer. And this, I guess, will end. They're very excited. Lemaher, we bring in Shabbos 18 minutes early in Jerusalem, 40 minutes early, whatever, you know, bring it early. Or as Rav Soloveitchik says in Hilchot Tshuva, and in his Tshuva, we mentioned a number of times, Jews of Erev Shabbat. The Rav used to complain, we Baruch Hashem in America, and we're going back now, not 50 years probably, when he said this 50, 60 years ago, that their Baruch Hashem are Shomer Shabbos Jews, but what we don't have is Shomer Erev Shabbos Jews. You have that in Israel, you don't have that in America. I understand. The lawyer gets home from his Wall Street practice, you know, he's working till 11 o'clock every night, so in the winter he's going to leave at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He can't leave at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So he leaves at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Shabbos is 4:20. All right, so he gets home at 3:57, takes 5.5 minutes in the shower, so he walks in the shul like a dusha bintra, just makes it, you know. That's life. What can you do? So kashalimaher biyat Shabbat. The ideal is to be able to get prepared for Shabbos. Not that I've ever done it, but say shir shirim, you know, erev Shabbos. The preparation makes all the difference. Okay, I'm gonna have to stop. Come as early, so let's just do a very quick review. Building the sukkah, we discussed sukkahs is part of Yom Kippur and it's part of sukkahs, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch tells us you build the sukkah because it's right after Yom Kippur. It didn't have to be a sukkah; you have to do a mitzvah after Yom Kippur. Sukkahs, And then Sukkos, you have to build a Sukkah right away. It's Sukkos. And that, of course, is expressed in the Torah. Sukkos is part of Pesach Shavuot Sukkos. It's part of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur Sukkos. It's a dual holiday. Therefore, in a sense, it's the most important holiday. It's Chag. It's the Chag. The Korbanot are doubled. It's the culmination of the education that begins on Pesach, because the goal of education is to teach people life is full of challenges. You don't give up. You go for 40 years. You go... The next generation will have to continue our goals. So Sukkos is a holiday of Chinuch, and therefore in Masechet Sukkah is where you have all the stories of Chinuch. And then we just discussed a little bit about the beginning of the Hoshanah, which is really crying out to God, but it also has this element of praising God, and God is watching us. God, and that's why it's sort of, do you say it is part of Hallel, part of our tefillot, and we just hear the good. You'll go through the rest of it tomorrow or later. The whole thing talks about the beauty of Shabbat, all the things we do on Shabbat. When we talk, don't take the lulav and etrog. Okay, I want to wish everybody a chag sameach. Next week, 6 shiurim, Monday night, Mark Shapiro, Tuesday, Dr. Sokolow, and Rabbi Shulman, all our regular Parsha, Rivka Schwartz, Chazan Malavani on Geshem, and for Hoshana Rabbah. Like I mentioned, I'll figure out exactly what time, but we'll probably do a little later. I hope it was discussed earlier. That works for people, since there's extra long davening on Hoshana Rabbah. I don't want to make you go to a 6:30 minyan. I don't want to make me go to a 6:30 minyan. So maybe we'll start a half an hour later. I'll send an email. I'll figure out exactly when, and hopefully you can make it. But I want to wish everybody a wonderful Yontif and all good things. And we should come together, unity. That's what Pesach is all about, unity. Pesach. That too, but Sukkot especially, Yaakov and Esav and the Jewish people, Hakka, we should all come together. As I said 100 times, we need it now more than ever. This has been a rough year, and that ends, as we all know, for the Jewish people. And what happened on Yom Kippur is just a disgrace, an absolute tragic disgrace, what happened on Yom Kippur. And we can't have things like that anymore. We have to come together as a people and work out our differences. Okay. Chag Sameach. Thank you very much.
Chag Sameach. Chag Sameach.
Bye-bye.
Shabbat.